ॐ भद्रं कर्णे विश्वनियाम देवाः भद्रं पश्ये माक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तिष्ठवागुंसस्तनूभिः यशेम देवहितं यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तारक्षो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. So we'll be allowed to Shanti chapter 4 and on verse 18. Okay? Yadi heto palat siddhi. Yadi heto palat siddhi. Tola siddhis jahetu taha. Tola siddhis jahetu taha. Katarat purva nishpannam. Katarat purva nishpannam. Yasya siddhira pekshaya. Yasya siddhira pekshaya. Yadi hetoho palat siddhihi. Pala siddhihi cha hetutaha. Katarat purva nishpannam. Yasya siddhihi apekshaya. These very similar arguments concerning the nature of the cause-effect relationship are continuing for a long time. Okay, they're continuing for a long time. But there's a reason for this continuation, and that is in this chapter 4, any of the other darshanas, we don't really consider Advaita Vedanta a darshana. We consider Advaita Vedanta a means of knowledge as taught in the Upanishads. But the all of these philosophical systems, like for instance Sankhya and the Vaisheshikas, which he's dealing with right now, he will be dealing with the Baudas, also the Buddhists. The Vaisheshikas and the Sankhyas are dualists, and they don't have any such thing as mithya. Right? For something to be advaita, non-dual, you must have mithya, because otherwise there's going to be two. Like with Sankhya, the Prakriti is one real entity, which then is responsible, one real, beginningless entity. That's very important. Nobody created Prakriti. Prakriti is viewed as beginningless. But this beginningless Prakriti is responsible for giving birth to, for changing into, or producing the creation. And so between the Prakriti and the creation, there's what they call karya karana, a cause and effect relationship, which is considered to be real. And at the same time, the karana, as Prakriti, is considered to be beginningless. And so that possibility is being disputed. Right? That's one of the things. The other possibility that in terms of the cause-effect relationship or the beginninglessness of the jiva, if you say that there's a karya-karana relation, karya means effect, karana means cause, usually karya-karana, there's a cause-effect relationship between the jiva, which is transmigrating, and the punya-papa, you know, dharma-adharma, that is responsible for that transmigration. In other words, the body that you take, and this is in Advaita Vedanta too, this physical body that you take, with all of the prarabdha karma that takes you from your birth to your death, right, is brought about, is caused by punya-papa, which was brought about when you had a body. And so there's an infinite regress here. It's kind of like, as we're going to see, like kind of like the bijankara, the seed and the sprout. Which came first? Or the chicken and the egg? Which one came first? Because if this body is a product of dharma, a dharma, you know, which dharma and a dharma means punya and papa, which are considered adrishtapala. Adrishtapala means that the results of your actions, which are unseen to be manifest later, is the material, is the karma that is responsible for the next birth that you take. Right? So this birth, this particular body, the prarabdha karma, your major experiences, they're all due to this adrishta. Adrishta means unseen, the unseen karmas that are yet to manifest. And so within the whole Vedic world, reincarnation is accepted, punya papa is accepted, dealt with differently by the different darshanas. They have different things when they get into really analyzing what is punya papa actually, what is its reality and all that, there will be difference. But the reincarnation, there's no difference. The accrual of punya and papa, there's no difference. It's more or less accepted in the shad darshanas. The shad darshanas means the six darshanas that are astikas. Astikas means they accept the Vedas as a pramana. Okay, so even if you say that the jiva is beginningless, but is something which is born out of dharma adharma, which gives the punya and papa, right? Then we have a problem, because that hetu, which we call hetu, that cause, is dependent upon the effect, right? You have to have a body to get the punya and papa. Okay. But the punya and papa is responsible for the body. And so then, how can there be a first cause? Because the first cause itself is a product of the effect. And so whenever you get into karya karana, this becomes a problem, because the karana itself, the cause itself, is an effect. You know? The cause itself, you find, is not beginningless. It itself is an effect. And it becomes beginningless in terms of its sequence. Sequentially, the sequence, we can say, is beginningless. Sequence would be, you know, this dharma adharma, punya papa leads to this birth, which then creates punya and papa, which then is accrued and will lead to the next birth, etc. So that can be in a beginningless chain of this cause-effect relationship. But the beginningless change is itself not a thing. Right, the chain that this leads to this leads to this leads to this, in that sequence, the sequence is not a thing. Right? And so you're going to say, well, there's a beginningless sequence, but there's no thing that you're talking about. So these are all the things that are being kind of discussed here, all in order to show that that there is, in fact, no real cause and effect. Because you can't get to a first cause. And if you can't get to a first cause, then so, other, anyway, there's a lot of arguments going on around this. So here he's saying, which is similar to what we've been doing, says, yadi, if hetoho palat siddhihi, here siddhi, just take it as existence. If the siddhi, if the existence hetoho of the cause is palat, due to the effect, right? If the existence of the cause is dependent upon the effect, and if the pala siddhihi, the existence of the pala, the fruit, the effect, is due to the hetu taha, then he says, and really just to say exactly what they mean, if the existence of the cause, in this case dharma and adharma, is due to the effect, which is having a body, right? And if having a body is due to the cause, right, then he asks, Gaudapada asks, katarat purva nishpannam. Of these two, which one was born first? Right? Which one came into being first? Nishpannam means begotten, came into being. Purva means first. Of these two, which one came first? Yasya siddhihi, the existence of which, apekshaya, you know, apekshaya means, is because of the dependence of the existence of which of one, the other must be there, right? So that apeksha means that dependence, the dependence of one thing on another. So if you're saying the effect depends on the cause and the cause depends on the effect, well, which one comes first, you know, in order for this sequence to continue? And there is no answer to that, right? So he gives, because there's no answer to it, because they are both interdependent, right? The question then comes in, then the Purva Pakshi, the one who has the objection, will say, well, yeah, but you're not quite understanding what we're saying, because, of course, he's starting to say, and we'll be saying in this next verse, there is a sequence, right? But the problem that we're going to see is, yeah, but the sequence isn't a thing. So if you're saying the cause came out of the effect, but that effect was dependent on the cause, in a previous argument he said, it's just like saying the father was born from the son. Because if you're talking about things, the father was born from the son. Like, well, the father couldn't be born from the son because the son didn't exist yet for the father to be born. But then you have to go and say, well, that's not really what I meant. I'm talking about a sequence. But if you're talking about a sequence, there is no real cause and effect there. Mm-hmm. See what I mean? One thing is not causing the other in terms of a sequence. Right? So, let's get into more detail on that. We have to go to the next verse. Ashakti-ra-parijnanam Karmakopo tava punaha, evam hi sarvata buddhaihi, ajatif paridipita, ashaktihi aparijnanam, karmakopaha atava punaha, evam hi sarvata buddhaihi ajatihi paridipita. So, if you are unable to answer this question, if you are able to unanswer this question of which of the two came first, right? If that ashaktihi is there, ashakti means you're capable. Ashakti means you don't have that capacity. So if you're unable to answer this, which one came first, then this is aparijnanam. What this means is that your jnanam, your knowledge, parijnanam, means that you understand all the way around. You have knowledge, parijnanam. It means complete knowledge. One example they use for parijnanam is like if you have an amalaka fruit in your hand. It's just a little round fruit. You have it in the palm of your hand. You can see all the way around it. You know, so you understand it. You see all of the possibilities. You see what's involved here. So now we're talking here about the nature of reality. Okay. And so if you can't answer, because we're getting now into cause and effect, what is responsible for all of this? What is it really even responsible for the existence of the jiva? You know, what is all of this? Within this creation, we see only cause-effect relationship, and in our mind, we are contained within cause-effect relationship. This is because of this, because of this, because of this, and we should be able to get to some finality there. And so then, in the end, this cause-effect relationship should resolve into what is kind of the primary substance out of which everything has come, mm-hmm. right? So we have to kind of bring everything back into that final truth. what the Vedanta is saying is that there is no final truth here. This is all mithya. It's within mithya. In fact, there is no real birth or death at all. There is no real cause-effect at all. And they're trying to establish that there is no such thing as a real cause-effect relationship, because it doesn't. You can't get to that final cause. You cannot get to the first cause. If you can't get to the first cause, then it must be mithya. Because there is no first cause then. If there is no first cause, then what is the substance? So anyway, this is the argument that's going on and on and on. And looking at it from different ways. So what he's saying, now, if you can't answer this question of which came first, cause or effect, that if your ashaktihi is there, then aparijnanam, you don't understand what we're talking about here. You don't understand the nature of reality. You don't know, period. Right? So either you're going to have to admit to not knowing, not understanding, not being able to resolve this issue, or kramakopaha. Kramakopaha means or this, you just simply say, I don't know, I don't understand. Or the other thing that's going to happen to you is that there's going to be a degeneration, a loss, a falling apart of this idea of krama. Krama means sequence. Because once a sequence becomes anadi, anadi means beginningless, the sequence itself becomes beginningless, then in fact there is no cause and effect. Right? Because one thing comes from the other, comes from the other, comes from the other, comes from the other, comes from the other. If there's no point of resolution. So that's what he's saying. So either you just say, ashakti, you're not able to answer this, so ashakti, you just say you don't know, or realize that your whole idea of sequence is falling apart. Just like the father is the cause of the son is the cause of the father is the cause of the son. That's fine in terms of sequence, but it's not fine in terms of reality. Right? In terms of thingness, of what is actually happening. So then he says, what he says here is, so these one of these two things are going to happen. So he says, evam hi sarvata buddhaihi ajatihi paridipita. He says, so this, so in this manner, this ajatihi, this birthlessness, being free of birth, is paridipita, which is being pointed to by the buddhaihis, by these vaisheshikas, it's tongue-in-cheek, by these vaisheshikas and the sankhyas, in all of these different ways, they are pointing, they're trying to infer, they're trying to point to beginninglessness, birthlessness, of all of these things, of the reality, of the prakriti, of the jiva, of the self, all because even in the sankhya, the purusha is beginningless. The prakriti is beginningless. So, because they have to be a first cause. You know, if they're real, they have to be the prakriti has to be the first cause. The real prakriti is responsible for the production of the creation. So this first cause is something that you're trying to get to all these, by these buddhas, by these wise people. They're trying to reach this, trying to infer this in this way. In other words, the ways that you're trying to resolve this aren't working. They're not going to work. They can't work because you can't have a krama, because a krama is not a thing. So let me just explain that just a little bit more. You probably understand it, but if I say, just one more time, the father gives birth to the son, right? And that son gives birth to the father. But the father that the son gives birth to, it goes like this. The father gives birth to the son. The son becomes a father to give birth to a son, who becomes a father to give birth to a son. But there's no cause-effect relationship here in terms of karma. There's only a father. There's no beginningless relationship. There's no resolution to that relationship. There is a father who was himself a son, right? who gives birth to a son. So now you have the father who is a son gives birth to a son who becomes a father. And that father gives birth to a son who becomes a father. And so the cause-effect relationship doesn't really have anything to do with the question, who comes first? Right? Does the father come first or the son come first? You can't answer that question because the father himself was born, right? And so the father himself was a son. So it only makes sense to who comes first in terms of that one father and that one son. But there's no beginninglessness to the father-son relationship because the father himself was a son to his father. And that sequence is beginningless. Right? But the sequence doesn't say anything at all about the cause-effect relationship. So if you just take the one instance, this father gave birth to this son. Right? That's true. This father gave birth to this son. But is that father that gave birth to this son ajati, beginningless? No, because that father also was a son. And so this problem is anadi, is beginningless. The problem is beginningless. The sequence is beginningless. The father himself is not a first cause because the father himself was caused. Right? So they're thinking it's beginningless. But the sequence is beginningless. Not the father. Now he's going to go into another example of the bija and the seed. Same exact thing. Using the same, it's not really any different than the father-son, which came first, the bija, the seed, or the ankur, or the sprout. It's exactly the same thing. This sprout came from this seed, you know, which itself came from a sprout. Right? So again, we get back into the sequence. They're thinking the sequence is beginningless. The sequence can be beginningless, but it says nothing at all about cause and effect. Right? It says nothing about first cause. Okay. There's another problem here that they'll be getting into. First cause, what if you say if the first cause exists? Never mind. We're getting into that. Yeah. One step at a time. Okay. So these guys are in trouble. So let's do this verse 20. He tells the problem, which Bijankarakyo drishtantaha Sadasadhyasamohisaha Nahi sadhya samohetuhu, nahi sadhya samohetuhu, siddhau sadhya syayujyate, siddhau sadhya syayujyate. Bija ankura akhyaha, drishtantaha, sadha sadhya samaha hi saha, nahi sadhya samaha hetuhu, siddhau sadhya syayujyate. Okay. Here he says, the bija ankara, bija is seed, ankara is the sprout. So the bija ankara akya drishtanta, the drishtanta, this illustration that is called sprout seed illustration. Okay, the sprout seed illustration, drishtanta. In this case, in this is sada, it always here equal to the sadhya. The sadhya is a logical term. I'll have to give you the. I'll tell you what it is when I explain the logic. So because this bijankara drishtanta is going to be the same as the sadhya, and nahi sadhya samahetuhu siddhau sadhya syayujyate, there's a problem there because the cause, the hetu, when it's the same as the sadhya, when the hetu is the same as the sadhya cannot be established. So let me tell you what these terms mean. I have to say this in English, it's a lot easier for me. There's three terms here that are used in a logical syllogism. There's other ones too, but these are the three that they're talking about. The drishtanta is always it's always an example within a logical syllogism, which is going to show, give an example of an invariable relationship between two things that we're familiar with. So let me give you an example, the good old smoke fire. If I say, there is fire on the hill because I see smoke, that's a logical syllogism, okay? What is being proven there is that there is fire, right? There's fire on the paksha, on the hill. How do I prove it? There has to be a reason. The reason is because I see smoke. Now, why does that matter? Because smoke has an invariable relationship with fire. So that if I see smoke, I can infer fire because of that invariable relationship. So the sadhya here is the fire that needs to be proven. But now, if I say, I see smoke, there's fire on the hill. Everyone has to be able to say, oh yeah, there's fire, there's the smoke. That means everybody's familiar with this invariable relationship, you know? And so they will give a drishtanta, an illustration that everybody will say, yeah. And the illustration, common illustration for this syllogism is, like in the kitchen. It means when cooking in the kitchen, in the old days when you're cooking by fire in the kitchen, you're using fire, and you see the relationship that the fire produces smoke. Another one would be like, just like in the ritual. You know, when there's full of smoke, you know that there's fire. Okay? So, but they say like in the kitchen. That, because in everybody's mind, that brings to mind the invariable relationship. It's only a one-way relationship between smoke and fire. You can have fire that's burning clean and not giving smoke, so you can't use it the other way. But you can't have smoke that actually is smoke without the fire. So that drishtanta brings to mind the invariable relationship. Okay? So that is what allows, that invariable relationship is what allows the smoke to be the cause. If I see smoke on the hill, how is that smoke a cause for me to say there is fire? Only from the invariable relationship. So if I'm trying to prove that there's fire, look, there's fire on the hill, I don't see fire, I only see smoke. Well, that's why there's fire, because there's an invariable relationship. So the fire is the sadhya, the thing you're trying to prove. And the smoke is the hetu, the cause. And the drishtanta is the things that proves to you by an example in the world that there is an invariable relationship between those two things. Swamiji, in discussing this verse, he uses an example, Duryodhana, you know, in the Pandavas, and he uses this example in the Mahabharata war. Duryodhana is really the bad guy. He's the adharmi. He gives this. Duryodhana is just. Duryodhana is a just man because he's the eldest. Duryodhana is a just man because he's the eldest in the family. So is this going to work? There has to be an invariable relationship. All the eldest in all families, right, are just. And there is no invariable relationship there for there to be a logical syllogism. It will fall apart. Right? So that invariable relationship is necessary. So now what he's saying here, so this word sadhya, remember the word sadhya is the thing that needs to be proven, and the drishtanta needs to make a light bulb go off in your mind proving the invariable relationship, okay? So here he says, this drishtanta, this illustration between the bija, the seed, and the sprout is equal, it's not any better than the thing you're trying to prove. In other words, you now have to prove that this seed, that the relationship between the seed and the sprout is somehow leads to ajati, beginninglessness. Mm-hmm. But that itself is a problem. It's the same problem in trying to, that the sadhya has to try to show that the prakriti is beginningless, or that the jiva, the atma, so is beginningless. Mm-hmm. You know, you're using exactly the same cause-effect relationship for the sadhya. So you would be like saying, this cause-effect relationship in the creation, going to the first cause, is true just like the seed and the sprout. You see what I mean? Just like the seed and the sprout. And your mind should go, oh yeah, just like the seed and the sprout. Of course that's true, but what happens instead? The seed and the sprout. The seed and the sprout is exactly the same. The sama means the same. The seed and the sprout is exactly the same as the thing you're trying to prove here. It has exactly the same problem. So what he's saying now, this, the hetu, the cause, you know, the cause itself is now just being equal to the sadhya. See, like if I say the sadhya is the thing to be proven, if I say this, see the fire on the hill, I see there's fire on the hill because I see the smoke. The smoke is the hetu, right? But what if you say bijankara? You know, if you say the sprout seed, you use it as a drishtanta. The drishtanta is what establishes the hetu, right? It's what establishes the cause. So he says, this hetu is the same as the cause, and so it cannot establish, it's not capable, na yujate, of establishing, it's not capable of establishing or proving the sadhya. That's the problem. And so that's why they either have to plead ignorance, or they have to give up, this whole idea of cause-effect, you know, sequence, has to be given up. There's no way around it. Okay, that's enough of this. I'm just going to talk about it just a little bit more. Because it's all the same thing. Even if you take the prakriti, which is said to be beginningless in the Sankhya, prakriti is equal to maya in a sense, that it's made of sattva, rajas, and tamas. It's responsible for the projection of the creation, the resolution, projection, resolution. But it itself is producing a creation which then is going into resolution, which is then coming into creation, which then is going into resolution. So there's a krama there. This produces this, and then this goes into resolution, and this that has gone into resolution produces this. It goes on beginninglessly. It's also the same for the jiva. If the jiva itself is a product of dharma adharma, which I already went through, which produces this body, which then produces dharma and adharma, which produces this body, that's beginningless. So in Advaita Vedanta, we completely accept the beginninglessness of that krama. But when something is beginningless, you know, coming from something else, which came from something else, which came from something else, which came from something else, it's not possible to get to a first cause that is the actual substance of that chain, you know, because both are interdependent. You get into that situation where either you have to say that the seed produced the sprout, which then produced the seed, right? That's the trap they've got in. The seed produced the sprout, which then produced the seed, which becomes something absolutely unworkable, because if the seed produced the sprout, which itself produced the seed, if that's the what you're saying, this seed did not exist until it was produced by the sprout, but the sprout was dependent upon the seed. So that's an impossibility. So you're not, you cannot be talking about anything real here, right? Because if the seed produced this sprout, which is responsible for the production of the seed, this seed didn't exist to produce this sprout. So that's the infinite loop that you get into. So you actually, within duality, you can't come to any type of resolution in terms of cause and effect. You can get into an infinite sequence, is all. But you can't land anywhere, you know? And so, and you also can't, you can also say that something which is existent, right, is producing something that is existent. Well, I'm not going to go there right now. You can't say something that is non-existent produces anything because it's not there. Just simple, right? You can't say that something both exists and doesn't exist to produce something else because there is no such thing as something that doesn't exist. That's another problem. When we start talking hypothetically and we use words like non-existent, we start to think that it's something. But non-existent is actually nothing, nothing there. And so you can't have existence plus non-existence produces. Right? And then something that actually exists itself can't produce anything because it is unborn. If it actually exists, it cannot have a prior condition because the prior condition negates its existence. Right? So if it came into being, it has a prior condition of not being. If it didn't come into being, then it exists. But if it didn't come into being, it itself is beginningless. Something which has never come into being can't produce anything because it doesn't have any parts with which to exist within time and space to be subject to birth, or it would have already been born. It's already part of that sequence. And so you get, all of this is going to be going around and around and around. Why? Because if you can establish that there is such a thing as birth and death, then this dual world is real. There is duality. If something actually comes into being in reality, then duality is real. And we don't accept duality as being real. Why we say what we mean by it not being real is not at all that we don't experience it. What is this? We expect to experience nothing but duality with our means of knowledge, with our mind, and with our sense organs. This world is dual. It's infinitely dual. In every direction that you look, whether you look into big or small, it's infinitely divisible, and it's infinitely compounded also. And it's continually changing. So our whole world is a world of duality, and we're always trying to find first causes within this world of duality. And so when we think, in order to really know what the truth of all of this is, we have to go back to the beginning, right? To find what is that, what is that inviolate substance from which is itself causal to all of this. And we say there is no such thing. There is no first cause. Brahman itself is not a cause. Brahman has not changed in any way to give birth to this world. From the standpoint of Brahman, there is no karya-karana. There is no cause-effect relationship. Brahman has not become anything. Yourself has not become anything. It has never been born, it has never improved, and it has never degenerated either. Brahman simply is. And so the cause-effect relationships exist within this closed container that we call Maya. But does Maya itself, what is its being? What is its first cause? We say, it has no first cause. It has no being at all. Its being only is beginningless, changeless, timeless Brahman. Beginningless, by that I mean timeless Brahman. So nothing has happened here. It's very similar. That's why in the Mandukya Upanishad we go into the dream drishtanta. We have a drishtanta. We have so many drishtantas for this. They have no drishtanta. They have no drishtanta to establish any type of first cause within a real cause-effect relationship. You can only get to a beginningless karma. But that isn't talking about a thing. There's no thing there, right? And so they're not able to get to or find a drishtanta to have any type of logical syllogism, nor can there be any experience. But not being able to have a drishtanta is key. You say something, but then you can't give a hetu. You can't give a cause for it. You can't give an illustration. Something that you say, this is the truth, you should be able to give an example like such and such. But if you're giving making some sort of truth, and you can't give any example of it, or you can't give a cause, the cause itself, you know, should have an example that shows that invariable relationship. If you're trying to get to some sort of first cause, you can't get there. So we say, yeah, you can't get there. We don't try to get there. It's mitya. Mitya means it has no being at all, just like the dream, just like your imagination. Say you're in the dream world, and you're trying to figure out a first cause to the dream. How are you going to do that? You're stuck, you're in the dream world, as a character in the dream world, and you're trying to figure out what is the first cause of this. What's going to happen is you're going in every direction you go, it's going to end up in infinite regress, you know, of kind of a series. You can get an infinite regress of series, no matter which direction you go into, whether you go in terms of trying to find the first moment, in terms of time, or if you're trying to find an ultimate subject, an ultimate, matter, piece of matter. Like if I break this down, I should find like the smallest particle, the smallest atom that is indivisible, not possible as long as it takes up space. Or if I'm trying to find the first in the cause-effect series, not possible. No drishtanta for it. There's only drishtantas to prove it's not true. But then with maya, everything fits perfectly. You have all kinds of drishtantas for it. You have all kinds of experiences for it. But when you get into maya, but what you end up saying with maya is that all of this that we experience, even though within the story of this experience there's so much logic, there's so much order, there's so much infinite intelligence, we accept all of that, but we say it's mitya. Means it has no independent being of its own. Your imagination is extraordinary. Dream is extraordinary. But it's mitya. It's not, but it's mitya. Isn't that too bad? It's mitya. The mitya itself is an amazing thing. But there is such a thing that we call maya. The order of reality of maya is mitya. That isn't a denigration. It's just a reality. What difference does it make where we say this is mitya or this is satyam? Neither one is a denigration. It's just a placeholder. It's a category. In terms of the totality of the reality we experience here, this whole creation falls under the category of mitya. All that means is that this is an infinite expression of Brahman that has no being separate from Brahman. That's all it means. It's what we call vivarta upadana karana. This whole creation has for its material cause Brahman, which is vivarta, means it itself does not go under through any type of modification or change to become this creation. Like in your dream, like in your imagination, like mistaking a snake for a rope for a snake. Like a clay pot. Like a gold chain. These are all satya mitya examples. We have hundreds of examples. You can go on and on and on with Satya Nitya examples. It's not a denigration. People, why I'm saying this is because people tend to, in kind of this Neo-Vedanta and some of these things, it says, though, oh, this is Advaita. It just makes this all into an illusion. Mm-hmm. In fact, Swamiji is very careful not to use the word illusion. It's not a good word, because illusion, when you use the word illusion or delusion, you're using it subjectively. Like this world, say I'm having delusions or illusions, or this is just like some sort of a magic, that I'm putting this world on the same order of reality as my subjective, reality. And so that becomes problematic, and I become dismissive of it. My subjective reality exists within this objective reality, but I can use my subjective reality, like the dream or the imagination, to help me understand on a total level that this, Swamiji will say, is like a bigger joke. That from the standpoint of Brahman, the subjective reality of my dream, my imagination, right, has no more or less reality than this whole universe in reference to the self. But when a person ignorantly is using a word like illusion, then this becomes an illusion, and somehow I become the one who's having the illusion. This body, mind, sense organs is having an illusion. And so I dismiss this world as illusory, and somehow I, this body, mind, sense organs stays real. It's a very confusing thing. You have to be careful when you use these type of words. So anyway, the Gaudapada is going from every imaginable way to logically put an end to the cause-effect relationship being responsible for this creation. But there is no cause-effect relationship. That's what this is about. It has to resolve into Satyam Mitya, that there is no cause-effect relationship. That's what we're doing. To the best of our ability. We'll stop there. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah Harihi Om. You know these prakriyas, these teaching methodologies, like there's like the Drik Drisha Viveka, Seer Seen, Zipporn Prakriya, the Panchakosha, the five koshas, like the body and the prana and all of these. That's another Viveka discrimination. Maybe the Karya Karana Prakriya is perhaps, they're all very important, but the Karya Karana, cause-effect prakriya, is the prakriya, is the teaching methodology that resolves the cause-effect. Like, what is the cause of the world? What is the cause of this reality? All this cause-effect. Karya's cause, we say Karya Karana because just in a Sanskrit compound, Karya has only two syllables and Karana has two, so it works that way, Karya Karana. Anyway, just a little Sanskrit aside. The cause-effect prakriya resolves the cause-effect relationship into satyamitya. That's what has to be understood.
Mm-hmm.
And the cause-effect is what, in science, what we're all looking for. You know, what is the cause of this? What is the final cause? What is the real cause of the creation? And so we have cause-effect on the brain. You know, we're contained within the cause-effect paradigm. And so this particular prakriya is really, really important. It's a very powerful prakriya because what it does is it takes away the cause, keeps the cause-effect relationship stays within nitya.
So this definition of vivarta?
Vivarta upadana karana.
Okay, Brahman becomes the creation without undergoing any change whatsoever. Is that the basic...
We say that, but becomes the creation, from the standpoint of the creation, what is its material cause is only satchit. What is actually here is only conscious being. Conscious being is what? Is Brahman. So the material cause of the creation in terms of what is actually here is only Brahman. But Brahman goes through no change to become the creation. And so it's the upadana karana, the material cause, itself undergoing no change to become the creation. Nevertheless, because it's the only thing that is here, and what is actually here is satchit. And satchit hasn't gone through any change, it just remains a satchit. So satchit, conscious being, right? Chit, consciousness, sat, being. And so we do, there in our teaching methodology, so one, like if I say, this is, you start to realize there's a common denominator, which all things enjoy, all things on every level, on subtle levels too. Your thought is, your emotion is, your feeling is, your ahankara is, your perception is, all objects are. Existence is in the invariable. There's nothing, there is no experience of non-existence. Every single thing that is experienced or capable of experience enjoys being. The being is the invariable. And everything within the creation is known or can be known. It is and it is known. It is, in terms of, just take as the experience of the jiva, we can go to Ishvara later, but every single experience that you have, subtle or gross, it is and it is known. That's the invariable. That's the satchit. And it never changes. It's not the isness doesn't change. If I say this is, there's difference in nama rupa, but not in the isness. An example Swamiji uses a clay pot in a different way. Like if I have a clay pot, the clay pot is, if I break it into shards, the clay shards are. If I break the shards into molecules, the molecules are. If I break them into atoms, the atoms are. The isness is invariable and non-objectifiable. It's invariable, non-objectifiable. So is the knownness. The knownness never varies. The satchit never varies. But all the nama-rupas, which is all of this, you know, are continually coming and going, changing, being dissected, being put together, going through birth and death, right? But everything is taking place in satchit, which is not going through birth or death or any type of variation. And so satchit is the upadana karana. It is actually the karana, but it has not produced the effect. The effect has no being to be produced. It's mitya. Let me say one more thing. The clay pot, the pot hasn't been produced as any real thing away from the clay. It's not that the pot's not there, but it hasn't been produced as a real thing away from the clay. In reality, there's only clay.
I think you might have just answered my question, but at one point you said Maya is an infinite expression of Brahman. I was confused about the word expression, but if expression is similar to the way you're talking about cause here, then I
would
have a problem.
Well, all expression would mean is this manifestation of nama rupa. That's all.
But it's not like it extrudes it.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or speaks it or.
No. Yeah. Not like that.
Not like what?
Not expression means to talk or speak, right? So Brahman is not expressing himself in words or something like that. There's no activity taking place. Just like if you say, when you have a thought, you can say that thought is not an activity taking place other than within itself. But it has no being. It's not born of something.
I'm having trouble with the idea that, like, for something to be true, you have to have like an everyday example of it. Because I was thinking about, I don't know, something like, there are examples in physics, like that we wouldn't have, like an atom can be in two places at once. Like I wouldn't be able to give you like a kitchen example of that, but it's still true.
I'm talking about in a logical syllogism where an invariable relationship is necessary. Like say, you're able to prove in one way or another through your perception or through your machines or whatever they are, the fact that atoms can be in two places at once or you can be an atom or a wave or whatever. You're able to prove that through whatever means of knowledge you have. You know, but if you're doing a logical syllogism, then you have to have an invariable relationship. But to have an invariable relationship, you have to know it's an invariable relationship. To know it's an invariable relationship, you have to have an example of one. But now we're talking about a logical syllogism.
I see. So you're just saying, you're not saying blanket statement.
No. I'm talking blanket statement within a logical syllogism.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's why this is not true in the West, but in the East, they want you to give a drishtanta, an illustration as part of a logical syllogism to mean you've seen this invariable relationship somewhere else that people can relate to. And that's why I thought Swamiji's example of a failed logical syllogism is like Duryodhana is just man because he's the eldest. There's too many examples of where the eldest is not just for that to... And then they have all of these type... If you get into Nyaya, which I cannot teach you without a lot of books and a lot of time, there are so many ways that this invariable relationship can fail. You know, that's not an invariable relationship. Like, for instance, for example, you know, smoke, you can have fire with smoke. You could also have fire without smoke. But if you see smoke, then you can infer fire. Right? But that doesn't mean that fire can't exist without smoke. So, you know. Do you get it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you were also saying, you know, that that the world is mitya and Brahman is satyam. You said that they're of equal value, that there's not, mitya is not thought of less than satyam.
Well,
what were you trying to say there?
I'm trying to say that sometimes when we're just talking about Brahman, about reality, because mitya is mitya, you could say, well, mitya is not satyam. True, mitya is not satyam. Right? Or you can say that mitya is only satyam in terms of truth. But somehow we can get into this denigrating the creation because it's mitya.
Yeah.
What does that have to do with it when we're talking about orders of reality? If we look at this whole infinite creation as an infinite display of Brahman or whatever words we want to use, you know, that's an incredible thing. It's infinite intelligence. It's like infinite knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has its own tremendous beauty.
Mm-hmm.
What is the denigration for? Which I just hear that sometimes, and so I just want to say, well, what is that about? If the whole thing is only Brahman. Right? So this creation is something amazing.
So you're talking about Brahman then when you're talking about creation, therefore you don't say it's something insignificant, less than Brahman.
It's not insignificant, it's not less than, it's what it is, it's mitya. It's Brahman. So I can say this is not only Brahman. This is nothing but Brahman. But then you have to understand what's really, it's perfectly legitimate to say that, but your students might not understand what you're saying unless you've made that clear. If I held up a clay pot and I said, this is nothing but clay, it's only clay. And you say, yeah, it is only clay. You might say, yes, so, you know. But you're not denigrating the pot by saying this is just clay. There's no denigration.
Yeah. Because there is that tendency. I mean, you want to be with the real, or you want to be with the substance and not the manifestation of it. The mitya manifestation.
Yeah, but why is that? And you can talk about in terms of, as an Ajnani, when you take yourself to be this, then you're subject to birth and death. If you talk about all the suffering that you have to go to because you have a human body,
yeah.
You can say, I think I'd rather just abide as Brahman.
Yeah.
You know? But there's no reason to put down Ishvara. It's not something to be put down, it's something to be understood. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, it's nice to say, everything is nothing but Ishvara. It's all Ishvara.
Yeah. Yeah.
Swamiji likes that better, some you can say it's all Brahman. But if you say it's all Ishvara,
yeah.
That's as true as saying it's all Brahman. Yeah. Because Brahman is Ishvara, Ishvara is Brahman. If you say Ishvara, you're acknowledging this Maya Upadi.
Yeah.
Everything is Ishvara. There is, in fact, no jiva. Jiva is just a product of Ajnana.
Yeah.
What you think is a jiva is really just Brahman. It's just Ishvara.
And even that mistake, even that projection of I am a jiva, is only
Ishvara.
Yeah.
But when we divide, go into the creation and we divide up the vyavahara, the empirical
mm-hmm.
reality of Ishvara, Ishvara Srishti, and Jiva Srishti, the Jiva Srishti, Jiva's creation, exists within the laws of Ishvara, but it's being coming from the Ajnanam of the Jiva.
Yeah.
Right? But it's still all existing within Ishvara. And Ishvara is nothing but Brahman. But all of these different orders of reality have to be understood well. You know? Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that's enough for tonight. I think I want to kind of...
That's better than sprouting the seed.
Oh.